Y'all want to hear some wild shit that happened to me today?
No.
That's unfortunate.
We're going to hear it anyways, aren't we?
Yeah. So Tumblr just implemented this new feature, which is just PvP zones, but for the internet.
I'm pretty sure the internet already has those, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, the internet itself is a PvP zone, just kind of the whole thing. But this one's like, you get selected. It's the fucking Hunger Games. You get selected from a crowd and dropped into a small arena where you duke it out with other people who have also been selected. Tumblr just added this new feature where it's like, if it thinks that you like blog about certain things, so like the one it pulled me for was Steven Universe, it like will drop you into a quote unquote group chat. Unfortunately, I'm pretty sure there's about 200 people in this group chat. Jesus. So it's really more of a Twitch chat about a stream that doesn't exist. And it like, there's also a bot that doesn't moderate it so much. It's just like provides things. And so it's just like, Tumblr bot, please show me cute dogs. And then it'll show you a picture of a cute dog, but then people will ask it to show it pictures of various Nintendo characters' feet. This is what, I experienced when I was in there.
I'm very terrified.
Yeah, in terms of the like internet PvP zone, I was not appropriately kitted out. I didn't have my blinder goggles on. I was
didn't put your memes in your pocket up front.
No, I didn't. But anyways, so that's just a wild thing that happened to me today where people tried to send me pictures of Kirby's feet.
Well, thanks for coming to our podcast, guys. I'm done.
Hi, and welcome to Brought to the Table, a podcast where a group of dudes who call each other friends
are not ready for this.
Today, we're going to be talking about a topic that I forgot because we decided what topic it was like a month ago. Ian, take us away.
Well, okay. So as Scott said, I am Ian. The topic that we're going to be talking about today is actually children's culture. Children's culture, it's normally defined as this sort of subset of the larger culture that children grow up in, but it's more of a cumulative culture that is created specifically by young children. And it's in like very similar processes to regular cultures. It can actually be passed down from one generation of children to the next generation of children. It can also be passed down in the sense from different groups in the same generation. So you have things like crazes and fads and trends. I'm sure everybody remembers like something that went through their high school that like somebody from like another school brought with them. And it's like, oh, this was the new thing for like a month and then never talked about it again because that's a thing. It's a weird thing because you normally see a lot of this behavior, a lot of these things come up in like 7 to 12 year olds, which I find really interesting because that's the age range that I work with as a counselor in schools. I see a lot of kids interacting in this sort of children's culture. A lot of it nowadays is populated with memes and like TikTok stuff, but it's a lot.
Can you, for the audience being me, what is TikTok?
So imagine Snapchat, but even worse.
Oh, I was thinking it's Vine's shittier younger brother.
It's like if Vine's shittier younger brother and Snapchat had a child.
And that child was between 7 and 12 years old, apparently?
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
All right, I get it now. Thanks.
So the fun thing is, a lot of people will think, oh, so you mean like cartoons and stuff that kids watch? Not entirely. So it's very different from what is a mass media culture that is made for children. As this sort of children's culture, it is directly created and curated by children themselves. Mass media and stuff like that, it could be parts of it, like it contains fragments that get brought into children's culture, but it's mostly like the mass media is marketed to children or produced for children, whereas this is directly created by children. A lot of this, you'll see it in situations where it mimics the sort of adult culture. So in like what we have here, you will see things where it's like, oh, children playing house or playing doctor, or they're going out and working in the yard and like, oh, I'm a construction worker. And like, they're sort of acting out what they see adults doing and they're sort of mimicking it. But a larger part of it is it's more of a mockery in a sense. And that's a huge key element to this, is the fact that children's culture is set up as a parody of like what adults do.
Yeah, I just get fucking owned by 12-year-olds all day, every day. And that's just their culture. To bully me.
Well, you're also not an adult, so.
Ow.
Carter's feelings.
So, a large, taking it from more of like a Western society standpoint, because that's what I currently am working in, where I'm at, you see this normally in back streets, sidewalks, the yards, the back areas of housing. You'll see this in woods and stuff, wherever there's places for kids to sort of like gather and be a bit out of parental supervision, where it's just like they're out playing. It's basically just a bunch of kids doing their thing. And that's a large part of where it got another sort of name, which was street culture or children's street culture, which just sounds hilarious to me. But it also involves like specific locations. So, Carter and Scott, think back to whenever you were a kid. Did you actually have like specific areas that was like, oh, that's our headquarters, or like that's our secret base, or, you know, that was a specific area that you and all of your friends went to hang out?
I did live a quarter mile back in the woods, so getting people to come over to my house was not as simple as walking next door. So that one didn't work so great. But I grew up with one friend. But yeah, no, we definitely had like a fucking tree fort. I remember like after Hurricane Isabel or something, because I lived back in the woods, we had a bunch of trees, you know, fall down. And so for a long time after that, we like used those trees as like forts and stuff. And we would even like bring chairs and shit back there. That's dumb. I don't know why we were allowed to bring chairs just into the woods, but you know.
I mean, that's honestly exactly what I was talking about. So like the idea is that you have this area that as a kid, like is quote unquote, quote, sacred space. It's like somewhere that you've made where it's like, ah, yes, this is mine, or this is ours as a group of friends. You often incorporate sort of like items from the surroundings, such as like, you know, your example of just random trees that fell over. You made a tree fort out of it. That's very common. This will include things like pine cones that you collect and you make things out of that. Or if you're in more of an urban setting, you have like a abandoned warehouse or something like that. That's not uncommon for kids to be like, that's the place, and just like build shit there by like, oh, hey, we found an old car seat. Let's make something out of that. Oh, hey, here's like a grocery cart. We're going to do something with this. Like, it's a very creative process.
How do children live past the age of like 10? Like, an abandoned warehouse? That sounds so dangerous.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the point, is there is a small amount of danger that a lot of people see with it now, but there has been a large increase in how much parental supervision is overarching and sort of cutting into what this children's culture is. And in a sense, like, a lot of people are like, oh, well, that's good because the kids are staying safe. You know, there's parents watching them. Nothing's going to happen to them, which is a good thing. But it's also something that is kind of limiting to the kids themselves. The important thing about children's culture, like why it is a thing, is because it gives kids a chance to not only follow rules, which they have in adult culture. Like, how many of you remember growing up and your parents were like, well, if we're going to the store, you have to wear this sort of like clothes. You can't go out wearing that. And you don't really have a say in it. You just do that. But as a kid in a kid culture, you can come up to those rules and process them and figure out why they are the way they are, because you're able to test them, you're able to mock them. And that's a very key component for kids figuring out how rules work.
You get to make your own rules.
I mean, exactly. That is a very key part of it. Take the game Scrabble. You get a bunch of adults playing Scrabble, everybody plays by the official rules. If you get a bunch of adults and kids playing Scrabble, the kids sort of like push at the rules and like, well, why can't we do this? Or can we do this? And then the adults are more of, no, these are the rules and we're following them. If you get a bunch of kids together to play Scrabble, who the fuck knows what game they're actually going to play with it, because they will sit and make their own rules. And in most situations, what you see is that the rules that they develop are more focused around having a fun time for everybody and more inclusive, so that the rules that they make on their own are typically a little bit more fair than what adults would have if adults just followed like whatever the official rules were. So a large part of this is focused around the idea of fairness and play in the sense of not actually a competition where it's like I have to beat everyone, but more of a I want to have this enjoyable experience with everybody involved where we're contesting each other, but nobody's really trying to, like, fight the other person.
I feel like this is a very ideal world you're living in here, Ian, because children are assholes a lot of the time.
Agreed. Children are assholes.
Speaking from personal experience, if you give people the ability to change the rules, some people will do it for good, so everybody's having a good time. And some will say, no, when you're playing tag, you have to tag with both hands, otherwise it doesn't count, so I'm definitely not it now.
Yes, that is a common thing, but the average that they got from their studies was that overall, kids like skew more towards a fair middle ground. Again, this is like 7 to 12 year olds. It was less common in the 12 year olds because like preteens are little shits.
They've also had more time to be ruined by the world.
That too.
More time to have had somebody been an asshole to them and then realize, hey, I can do this too.
Yeah, exactly. But like some of the interesting rules that kids come up with are sort of the idea that it's like a spirit of the place. So like dark areas or, you know, the abandoned warehouse that I used earlier or any sort of location is very likely to just sort of come into a reverence, either positive or negative, where it's like we either don't go there for whatever reason or that's a safe spot. Anything bad happens, you can go there. And it's more of just like a feeling of the area. It would be something that the most close connection I would make is a lot of people thinking of like a sanctuary in a church. You go there and you feel this sort of thing like this is a safe spot or this is a spot that is like designed to be safe for somebody who believes in that faith. Kids do this with a lot of areas. And so the rule is like it's a very superstitious sort of system. You all heard the whole thing of like, you know, step on a crack, break your mother's back, right?
Totally.
Yep.
So where did that come from? We have no idea. That's just something that every child always knows. Like,
it was a scientific study done correlating broken mothers' backs to people stepping on cracks.
In all fairness, there is a scientific study that also correlates an increased number of storks seen in Germany with a higher birth rate that year.
Yeah, it's because of the babies.
The superstitions of that area are a large key component. The culture kind of revolves in multiple different areas of both like a abstract sort of supernatural sort of belief system as well as an operating system for how to socially interact with each other. So growing up, did you all ever have in your school like that one old woman who's like definitely a witch? Like there's something about her that she's not normal. Or there's that one haunted house or just like this item, if you do something specific, it's very unlucky.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Back in my neighborhood where my dad's house is, all the kids, we all had dirt bikes because, you know, it's a big area and we had to get around. So we all had dirt bikes. And there was this, like, dirt excavation quarry. I don't really know what it is. But, like, supposedly back in the back of there is this cabin that, like, had all these clown pictures on the floor of it. And that's like, that don't go there. That's a no. And I'm like, yeah.
Oh, wait. I think I remember this. I think I've been to this place. Do you?
You've been to the clown shack?
Yeah. I specifically remember the clowns.
Yeah.
So like, that's the sort of thing that I was meaning is that's a location that it's the spirit of that place is this is dangerous. Like,
yeah, but that place might actually be haunted.
I mean, that's entirely fair. Like, looking back on it, that's a really fucking sketchy thing. How the fuck did you all not get murdered?
My neighborhood had a similar, like, just abandoned, very large house that we thought was a haunted mansion, you know? It's a common thing.
And that's a very big hallmark of this children's culture, is that no matter where you're at in the United States, at least, again, a lot of these studies were done in the United States or similar Western cultures, a lot of these sort of themes are very common across different geographic regions. It's just a common thing that kids do. And it's something that really doesn't carry over all that much into adulthood. You know, another thing that I say, like with rules, you also have things like truce terms, timeout or uncle, stuff like that are really big examples. But there's also things like parlay, kings and exes. Those transcend a lot of geographic regions as well. Like, they date back to medieval times with, like, the original calling of, like, truces between, like, people who were knights and squires who were competing in jousts and stuff like that. These date back a long way away, but they continue to exist with kids. how often do we have it now that, like, if you're in a meeting with somebody or you're competing with another person at work, that you call a truce or you say, hey, time out, and actually mean it in the same sense of a kid saying time out?
That's true. I have used the, hey, time out style thing. It doesn't really work.
It's not the same. That's just saying slow down. That's not saying we need to go eat lunch.
Yeah. And that's the thing, is with kids, it's very much an idea of, okay, let's stop right now. Let's either clarify the rules or this hurts or something's not right. But once you become an adult, it's normally more of a, all right, let's slow it down a bit. Let's just take a step back and we're going to keep going. The phrases that are used are normally more specific to the geographic region, but it's not an idea that is confined to one area. It's also interesting because it's literally just words that everybody understands, such as, like, you know, timeout and stuff like that, but it involves a huge amount of, like, trust and, in a sense, like, honor for somebody to be like, look, I know what you're saying and I'm going to respect that, in the sense of, hey, you called for a timeout, I'm actually going to stop because you called a timeout. There's really no repercussions as a kid if somebody's like, time out, and you still keep doing something. Like, in the grand scheme of things, there's no repercussions for that. But in most situations, if a kid calls time out, most of the other kids are going to be like, okay, we respect the rule of time out, which is amazing for kids to respect anything, really.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine that they respect, for one, you know, respecting each other in that regard is definitely something that is important in, you know, this kid culture that they've got, you know, just within them, their own circles. But also I think that a lot of the times the effects of a punishment or any repercussions as a child are just, like, so much more immediate. You know, I fuck up as an adult and I might not ever tangibly feel the repercussions and be like, oh, this is because, you know, but, like, I spend a little too much money here and then down the road I don't have as much money, you know, like the or, you know, I get into an argument with somebody and a little ways down the road, my performance review isn't as good, or, you know, something like that. But as a kid, you get into an argument with somebody and you don't, you know, respect their boundaries. That's a mom call right there. That's game over. You've already lost.
Carter showing his non-aggressive side. I thought you were going to end that with, you know, make somebody mad, they you punch die. You.
There's that option.
Like, you guys seem like very well-behaved children. You're all,
that's
like,
what I've been told, yes.
Let's go explore the clown house, have a good time, then we'll call mom. Everybody will not punch me. I don't know.
Listen, I punched the shit out of my brother. Okay, don't get me wrong.
Siblings are completely different here.
That's true.
All right, well, moving on. How many of you all know what playground songs are?
Playground songs? No, I know.
Are these like jailyard songs?
Honestly, yes. They're very similar. Except it's a very just like different group of individuals singing it. So if I start, I hate you, you hate me. Can either of you finish that?
Let's all go and have some tea.
Fuck you.
I don't know what the real answer
is. Yeah, I haven't heard that one, but I know what you're talking about now.
All right, so the whole, like, I hate you, you hate me, let's get together and kill Barney.
Oh, yeah, I remember this now.
Yeah, I do know that one. Okay, yeah, all right.
Here's the thing. I actually had to look up what the real lyrics for the Barney theme song was, because I don't remember it. I remember, you know, I hate you, you hate me, let's get together and kill Barney with a 2x4, knock him through the door, no more purple dinosaur. That's what I remember.
Oh, yeah. I remember this now.
I roughly remember it.
Where the fuck did that come from? Do you all remember learning that from someone?
It's that one episode of Barney, that nega episode.
Yeah,
of Barney,
the one that yanked from the air immediately.
Yeah. The one with Barno in it? You remember Barno?
No.
The evil Barney?
No, not at all.
He had green skin with a purple belly.
I got another fun one, which is the, like, blank and blank kissing in a tree.
That is another good example of one. Yeah. Mm. And so, like, that's another one. Then there's, oh yeah, Miss Susie. So this one, it's like, I've heard it occasionally from a couple other people that they had this one. It's also known as Hello Operator.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
That's a real song, I think.
Oh.
Okay, so Miss Susie had a steamboat, the steamboat had a bell, Miss Susie went to heaven, and the steamboat went to Hello Operator, please give me number 9,
yes, I've heard
and
this.
If you disconnect me, I'll chop off your behind the refrigerator, there was a piece of glass. Miss Susie sat upon it, and it went right up her, ask me no more questions, tell me no more lies, the boys are in the girls' room, pulling down their flies are in the kitchen, bees are in the park, 14 boys and 14 girls are kissing in the dark. Almost every single line of that is meant to, like, I'm almost about to say a bad thing. whether that's hell or behind or ass or boys are pulling down their flies, it's meant to poke and prod at, like, what can I get away with? How close can I get to this thing that I'm not supposed to do before I get in trouble? Whenever you have things like, I hate you, you hate me, or did you all have something where it was like, on top of my spaghetti, I lost my point.
Yeah. Well, that one's like a real song, though, I think.
It is, but there's a bunch of different variations of that song that the lines or words in it are changed by kids to make a parody of that song. There's one where, you know, I distinctly remember this because, again, as a kid, we're all little shits. One of them was, joy to the world, insert some teacher that we didn't like, is dead. What about the body? We flushed it down the potty, and round it goes.
I vaguely recall something like this.
It's a very macabre sort of thing that a lot of kids do, regardless of, like, geographical region and, like, demographics of any sort of way. A lot of kids do this, and it's something that you just sort of learn as you're a kid, and it's passed from one group to another. But like I was saying earlier, the reason for all of this is because kids look for ways to push the boundaries of what the adult culture is. And it's, you know, it's a challenge, or it's making fun of authority figures. It's, you know, just something that every child needs in a sense of, what can I do? What can I get away with? Why are these rules here? And how much give are in each of these rules? Do either of you have any questions before I go into, like, why kid culture is an important thing and why people should be like, hey, I'm not going to be a helicopter parent?
So, like, symbology, right? Do you know where I'm going with this? This is a pretty fun one.
I mean, are you saying with, like, kids being like, this item means this?
I want to know what the S thing is, Ian.
I don't fucking know either.
I want to know what the S thing is. For people who don't know what we're talking
everybody
about.
Everybody knows what we're talking about.
Everybody knows what we're talking about, right? So it's
the,
like,
three lines. Like, you do, yeah, a row of three lines, like vertical lines, and then three vertical lines underneath it, and you connect the points to make an S. Everybody fucking did that. Why?
Everybody knows that. Yeah, where'd it come from?
Where did it go?
I've looked into this before. Couldn't find it. I did find out it's very old.
It is. And that's the thing. Like, that is an artifact of kid culture. You know, it's the same thing as, like, jump rope rhymes. I almost would guarantee you that if you went and found somebody, like, 20 years, 40 years older than us, 60 years older than us even, and asked them, you know, that they actually did jump rope, and asked them, you know, what was a rhyme that you jump roped with? I almost guarantee you it would be almost identical to the ones that we have today, like the kids use today. A lot of this stuff in kid culture, like, it's changing, and it does change, but it contains its, like, it maintains itself based on the group of kids that has it. There'll be different changes based on, like, oh, well, kids over in this area, it's like, if you touch anything that's red after dinner, then that's bad luck. Another area might not have that specific thing, but they still have the same core idea of, this object or this action is a bad luck action.
I remember one of the ones that, I don't know if you had it, Scott, this was sort of like my local, like, immediate neighbors, like, on my street. You know how, like, on Tootsie Roll Pops, there's, like, the
Native American shooting the star?
Yeah, yeah, that dude. He's a good luck guy.
Yeah.
He's a good luck guy. That's how I won video games, man. So, like, on Tootsie Roll,
I mean,
Pops,
I understand the words that are coming out of your mouth.
Yeah.
But the concept is dumb.
It's, you know what? You tell that to my 12-year-old ass.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, as a kid, like, that stuff has meaning because you and every one of your peers put meaning into it. That stuff is true for you as a kid because you all think it's true, or you all make it true. And that's what the large part of this kid culture is that it's, as an adult, you can look back and be like, that's stupid, or blah, blah, blah. Like, why the fuck did we do that? But as a kid, you're continuing this. You're perpetuating it because this is what you do. This is what everybody else has done as a kid. This is what you're going to continue to do. And you're teaching and, like, reinforcing it for everyone else around you. But as you grow up, it becomes less apparent. It's like something that you just sort of, in a sense, grow out of after a certain point, but you still remember a lot of it. And in some ways, like, you look at it and it's like, how the fuck did that Tootsie Roll Pop thing, like, that literally has no impact on my life anymore. Like, where the fuck did that come from? But in some ways, it's this idea of, you have items that are good luck or a ritual sort of actions that you can take that, all right, I'm going to do this thing and I'm going to do better on this test, or I'm going to do better at work, or I might actually win a game of Apex Legends because I did something. I don't know. It's really interesting to look at it because you see it everywhere with kids. And like, I see it almost every single day. And it amuses me because I'm not, where I work at now is not a place where I grew up. It's very different from a lot of the places where I grew up. But there's still a lot of things that if a kid says it, I'm like, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I still remember doing this as a kid.
Yeah, so it's kind of like the summary of that I got was, kids are superstitious. And it's partly because they're more inclined to believe things, but also because they're more inclined to like perpetuate the beliefs once they see them.
Yes. Like that's a large part of it. The other part is that like as a kid, you are not only superstitious, but you are naturally very creative or imaginative. And this finds its way as an outlet into creating or being a part of this larger culture that kids have. The reason why all of this is important, which is like why I'm really fascinated by it, is it's something that we're kind of seeing dwindling away as much in the same sense as it was whenever, you know, the three of us grew up. I'm guessing like the two of you spent a decent amount of time like actually being physically present with a lot of your friends, like going out and being in the world with each other.
Sure.
Okay. The way that a large amount of us as like millennials and then maybe the generation like a year or two underneath us, we grew up in the sense that you are present with each other. You are going outside to playgrounds or parks or going down the street, or you're going into like the diner or the like, I don't know what fucking kids do anymore, but like you're going into these places.
Hey, wait, hold up. Did you go to diners as a kid?
Yes.
Weird.
What the fuck?
You never went out to like a restaurant or something like hung
not
out?
Not just me and my homies.
All right. Weird. The reason why this is important for kids is that childhood is kind of like a practice zone for being an adult. It's where you get to make mistakes. It's where you get to completely fuck everything up and be like, okay, let me try again. Because the mistakes that you make as a kid in most situations, before either of you give examples of where this is not true, in most situations, it's mistakes that you make as a kid are less costly, not only monetarily, but in any sort of resource. If I make a mistake and fail a class as like a second grader, that's not going to be as big of a thing if I fail a college, as if I failed a college class. It's even situations with like behaviors and social interactions. It's a lot better to make those mistakes if you're younger and you have more time to actually make the progress to correct those sort of behaviors than if, you know, you're 15 years old and you get in a fight with somebody. Yeah, that's going to be more of a serious situation. So this sort of like childhood is a practice culture for a lot of kids, and it gives them various ways of like figuring out who they are and various ways of just being like a person, and allows them to modify and build upon any skills or values that they have already that are part of what they're going to have in their adult life. So as a kid, who do you feel like you learned more from, or that you have more of a recollection of the time you had as a kid, either adults or other kids?
I think those are two different questions. Like, I probably learned how to be a functional adult from my parents, at least a plurality, but I remember a lot more just hanging out with other kids. So there are like subconscious lessons you're learning from that, but I think the conscious lessons were a lot more my parents than other kids.
So that's actually like spot on with it, really. A lot of times whenever we are having like an educational system, a lot of it is very adult-centric. It is adults telling kids, this is how it is. These are the rules. These are the things to do. These are the things not to do. These are the rewards and these are the punishments. And you will follow this system. That's how a lot of adults operate. And that's how we sort of like manage the world that we live in. For a lot of kids, however, that's not really how they learn to like operate in the world. A large part of how they learn to operate in the world is actually based upon their interactions and experiences with peers. You have a lot of it where adults can model and reinforce behaviors but the majority of that socialization and education comes from other kids. Which is why it's like a large thing of, hey, you don't want to be with a bad crowd of kids because you're more likely going to be very similar to them, regardless of what your parents do. And it's a really kind of a weird concept, but it's the idea that as a child, you're only going to get really authentic communication from other kids. How many of you can think of a time that either you as a child or you saw a child present like an adult or a parent, like a drawing that clearly was a really shitty draw? The parent's response is normally, oh, that's amazing. I love it. Complete bullshit.
Yeah, I did have a really good weekend. Thanks for asking.
Well, that's the thing is like in those situations, that's not really a truthful statement. The parents like, oh yeah, I love it. The real thing is like in most situations, like it, yeah, it's a bunch of squiggly lines. You do the same thing. That kid presents that same picture to another kid. They're more likely going to get a more honest answer, which is, what is it? Or, I don't really like it. It's got too much blue. It's the idea that only children and drunks are honest. And I'm sorry, but in most situations where you're an adult acting or interacting and speaking with another adult, if they're like, hey, what do you think about this? In most situations, you're going to be more honest with them and you're not going to be like, you know, I don't really like that. It's just kind of not my thing. And that's more of an authentic communication that you have with other adults. But for some reason, adults interacting with kids, we sort of flip that. We give them false communication because we don't want to hurt their feelings. Or we run the risk of like thinking that we're going to upset them. But that's the thing is with all other children, that's what they're getting. And that's a very key component to teach them. This is how you interact with people who are your equals. These are interacting with your peers. You're honest with them. It's the same idea as a teacher like having a red fire truck, in, like a toy fire truck in their hand and asking a kid, what color is this? That's kind of a false question because the teacher obviously knows. No kid is going to hold a red fire truck in front of you, know it's a red fire truck, and go, what color is this? Unless they're being a little shit. Like, kids don't ask questions like that because it seems pointless to them.
I have some good questions. Question, singular, maybe. So I'm very curious to see if you have any sort of answer to this question because it's something that, like, is very new. I think that you had touched on it earlier. I don't think we really got as deep into it as I would like, though. So today, you had said that sort of the kid culture thing is falling by the wayside. Now, I imagine a significant portion of that is just due to the fact that kids are able to interact with culture that is outside of their own much more easily. You know, mm-hmm. like as a kid, when we were growing up, you know, sans internet, essentially, like, you couldn't interact with all of the people in the world who played Pokemon. You had to interact with all of the people in your neighborhood who played Pokemon.
And only if you had a link cable.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, you know, people would tell you, oh, this is where Mewtwo is, things like that. You know, or you would go to the Scholastic Book Fair and pick up the cheat codes and, you know, go home and teach all your friends the fun cheat codes or whatever. Like, these are, you know, things that we could do, and our culture existed in that mm-hmm. bubble because that's the only place it could exist.
Yes.
You know, you can't really interact with adult culture. You can't really interact with kid culture outside of your block or your school or
unless
whatever.
You have like some sort of transmission, like somebody new coming in. Yeah,
exactly. Right. And so I imagine that today, because, you know, kids are able to access things like Twitch, like Reddit, you know, they're able to experience culture that is not necessarily geared towards them. And in fact, you know, they can partake in culture that is like kid culture that is like just widespread. It's no longer like there's no travel time anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, is that sort of what's happening or what's going on? Like, how does internet factor into all this?
So whereas the research on this is still very like new, it's a lot of stuff that people are still looking into because like
for sure
the internet does, as you said, it has a huge impact on this, but like they're still trying to get a lot of research pinned down of like where does this fall. A lot of people are like, oh, the internet is killing kid culture. Not really. like, in my viewpoint at least, the way that I see it is it's providing potentially an even better avenue for kid culture, because like you said, you have a larger sort of context that this kid culture can take place in. You can have it with just your neighborhood, but you can also have it somebody who's like in Siberia or somebody who's anywhere in Europe. You can have it in Australia. Like, you can have that connection and this sort of transmission of culture on a global scale now, which is amazing. Yes, there's also a lot of potential risks with this, but it's allowing a larger globalization of kid culture, which allows kids more access to different ideas, different processing techniques, different ways to view the world, and different ways to actually like build themselves up into people that they want to be. It gives them a better standing ground for creating new people. Like, as a kid, that's what you do, is you make a person out of yourself. It gives you more access to resources that otherwise you would not have. I mean, I grew up in a very different setting than the two of you, because the two of you lived same place for most of your life, right? Like, as a kid,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I grew up in a military family, so I had a lot of exposure for that time frame with a bunch of different areas, like a bunch of different subsets of culture, different regions having their own different superstitions and stuff. The way that, you know, I grew up, it was very much sort of a large transmission of kid culture. Kids today have so much more than that, like than what I had as that transmission. They have so much more access, and that's a good thing. Like, a lot of people would be like, you know, kids need to spend less time on the internet. Yes, that's true. Kids do need a lot less time on the internet. That's not even getting into that. But having access to other cultures and other ways of thinking and other ideals, like, that is a good thing. That gives you more areas to test out and figure out what you want to be in life and what sort of person you want to be. I mean, the ultimate goal of childhood isn't just making a person, like I said. It's more about like reaching out to find that independence of being an individual.
Yeah, so I was thinking about a big part of kid culture today, you know, is Fortnite. But I think a really good example of like how the internet has melded child culture isn't Fortnite, although that's super important nowadays. I think that Minecraft is probably a much easier like parallel here. Because, you know, it's very server-based, it's very community-based, you know, whereas Fortnite, probably you could have, what, four people you could go and play with regularly. That's not much of a community. But whereas in Minecraft, you are doing all those things that we did as a kid. You know, you're building those forts, you're exploring, and, you know, there are things that, you know, you go there, you know, it's scary, you know, there's creepers over mm-hmm. there, Enderman, you know, whatever, there's enemies. It allowed for this massive staying power of Minecraft.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's been around for years and it's still wildly popular. I don't think people, you know, in the shadow of Fortnite right now, I don't think people understand how much kids still love Minecraft.
I mean, to be entirely fair, I still fucking love Minecraft.
Yeah, like it's a really good sandbox. I mean, that's all it is. It's a sandbox. And so I very much enjoy that children are able to utilize that mm-hmm. in such an interesting and unique way, and the fact that online communities really beget that is something I think is changing the shape of child culture, changing what it looks like, yeah. But not for the
worst. It's keeping the core of what child culture is. It's changing, it's like reskinning it, basically. You're putting a different look on it, but the ideas behind it are still the same, and that's really what the important thing is. And like, while you did bring up Fortnite, and I agree that like, yeah, it's kind of set where it's only a team of four, I will actually bring up a point that I think Fortnite does a good job at, is almost every child in the school that I work at knows at least three Fortnite dances. And that is a huge thing that they use as sort of like, everybody knows this. This is a connection that every kid has. Like, as somebody who's my age and somebody who's just like looking at it, I'm just like, this is so fucking stupid. But at the same time, that is a really key part to kid culture, is this is something that they have that's theirs. It's not something mm-hmm. that you really see outside of it, but it's something that they can use to like identify people who are within like their cultural group. But then like where you brought up Minecraft, it's also the same idea as you have that, oh, this is a dangerous place, or these superstitions about your neighborhood of like, oh, this house is haunted, and if you go to this location at like midnight on Halloween, you'll go and get like trapped by ghosts or something like that. you still have that in more of an electronic setting nowadays. This would probably be a good topic for another podcast, so I'll just touch on it lightly, but things like creepypastas or copypastas, the stories of, like, with Minecraft specific, like, you know, Hero Brian, who's like supposedly this NPC that stalks your character, but actually isn't even real. It just sort of started as this sort of like story that somebody made up, and it just carried on to this day. Like, there's things where Hero Brian is actually part of this canon that people have made for Minecraft. Like, this is literally people developing a story off of something that was just started as word of mouth. You know, creepypastas like My Name is Ben from, I want to say it was Majora's Mask. Stories like that. Like, you still see those artifacts that we would grow up with, just done in a different way. The way that we knew child culture, or the way that we saw it whenever we were kids, it's still there at its core. It just looks different. And it's just kids still trying to figure out how to be themselves and how to make fun of their parents. Because really, that's what you do as a kid. You find adults and you make fun of them.
Ian, I want you to try and summarize why you picked this topic in one sentence.
So, I picked this topic because as somebody who works with kids, it's very interesting for me to see similarities in a lot of the kids to what I knew as a child, but have it being done in the same context, but viewed differently. Like, they're using different items. And it's just, it's fascinating to me.
All right, thanks for joining us today. We got back to an informative podcast. Ian here lecturing about child culture, Carter and I throwing in some random shit that was totally irrelevant. If you like this, or you've liked other episodes in the past, please check us out on all of our social media. That would be Facebook at facebook.com/brought to the table. You can tweet at us on Twitter at @ToTheTablePod. Check us out on Tumblr, Brought to the Table, or send us an email, broughttothetable@gmail.com. If you've been listening just by downloading episodes from the website, you can also just subscribe on your mobile phone using Stitcher. We're on Spotify now, guys. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts or on the Google Play app for podcasts. Just find an app. We're probably on there because we're awesome. Thanks for joining us today. Calzones.
Calzones.
I can agree with calzones.